Hey, football fans, it's Andrew Filippone, host of the First and Pod podcast. Join me and my co-host, three-time All-Pro Patrick Peterson, as we break down every game every week. New episodes drop on Monday and Friday mornings. Be sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Danny and Dusty.
It's not your problem, Doc. You don't have to mix up in this.
That is a hell of a thing for you to say to me.
With Danny Meringue and Dusty, the Fan Man Hera.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, skin it. Skin that smoke wagon and see what happens.
Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and 1080.
I'm your huckleberry.
The Fan.
Hour number two here on Danny and Dusty on a Thursday afternoon, right? Thursday.
It is Thursday.
I had to check my watch. People think that I'm joking when I say that. I don't remember what days are which.
Well, it's happens. A weird week, too, dude.
It's not like I've been out for 2 weeks or anything like that. Oh, wait, I have. Thank you for being with us. We appreciate you. We love you. Whether you're listening on 1080 AM, watching along on YouTube.com/1080AM The Fan, or Twitch.tv/1080AM The Fan, we appreciate you. Thank you for hanging out with us. We're going to pivot away from the Ducks for just a little bit. Don't worry, we're going to go back because there's plenty to get out of that game. But we have to pay homage to the best game of the day. Texas Arizona State turned into an absolute barn burner. And as much as we wanted to talk about the top flight players for Ohio State in the Ohio State Oregon game, Arizona State's 1-2 punch of Sam Leavitt from West Lynn and Cam Scataboo, your fifth place Heisman finisher. Ladies and gentlemen, those two were two of the best players in the country yesterday. They were absolutely phenomenal in what they were able to do. Scataboo, 1-for-1, 42 yards and a touchdown.
Passing. That was insane.
He had 222 yards passing from Sam Leavitt with a pick, but also 60 yards rushing. And my God, were his scrambles incredible. Look, this Texas team, I just watched Ohio State do what they did, and I'm possibly reevaluating this. I think Texas is the most talented team in the country. I think they F around and find out more than anybody else in the country, but I think top to bottom, their roster is absolutely insane. Their defense is incredible. Their secondary is out of this world. For Arizona State, the Big 12 team, there was after we saw Boise State fall to the side and we saw SMU fall, we saw all of the lesser than teams fall to the side. Arizona State, Texas scores quick. Same kind of deal you're talking about with Oregon, Ohio State.
Just like that.
It's right out of the gate, and you're sitting there going, oh, boy. After Arizona State marches down 12 plays, 6 minutes, they get a field goal.
You're like, okay, decent start.
But 12 plays, 6 minutes, they march down the field. Two plays, 77 yards later, Texas, and you're like, oh, no.
It's like Arizona State's competing. Wait.
And then Arizona State punts. And Silas Bolden says, see ya, and houses it. And you're sitting there going, oh, no. And this is the game that we thought that Ohio State-Oregon turned into. This is over. This is done. You give the punt. Arizona State goes for it on fourth down. They turn it over after 11 plays, 45 yards. Just, again, grinding and grinding and slowly moving the chains. Texas gets a field goal. Now it's 17-3, and you're just like, boof. Arizona State gets the ball back, goes one on fourth down again, gets stuffed again. That Texas defense just nuts up and says no. And you're thinking at this point in time, this is over. Texas is going, bend, don't break. We're going to give you yards. We're not going to give you points. Arizona State misses a field goal going into the half, which if they get that field goal, how different of a game is it? And again, you can play the what ifs about it, but you come out, Arizona State, feisty. They're not dead. They're not dead. They come out and they stuff Texas to start the second half. Then they go 11 plays and 60 yards and get stuffed for a third time on downs. I don't know what got into them play calling wise. They were running it when they should have thrown it. They were throwing it when they should have passed it. They were, running between the tackles when they should have tried to get to the edge. Like, they just couldn't get out of their own way in the first three quarters. Then the fourth quarter happens. Well, I should say, they get the safety, which I don't think this is being talked about enough.
Yeah.
Quinn Ewers getting on that ball that quickly, that saves them 6 points.
I agree.
That saves them six, or I guess 5 points. That saves them 5 points. Like, that's a huge, huge swing in this game. Big time play from Arizona State to put the helmet on the ball and get the fumble and get the disruption. But the thing that you saw from Arizona State, and look, I'm going to kick Duck fan when they're down right now, is that Arizona State didn't look like a wounded dog when they got down.
No.
They kept going. They kept clawing. They kept fighting. They showed Scataboo on the sideline puking his brains out, just losing it.
Scataboo looked bad on the sidelines at points. It's like, is he, like, okay? Like, not just able to go, but, like, is he doing all right?
And you're just like, oh, boy. You know, that their dude is not – he's probably sick. He's probably got something going on. He's probably got a bug. He got hit a couple times by Texas where you're like, oh, man, I don't know if he's getting up after that one. And yet they kept going, and they kept going, and they claw, and they fight. They get the safety. They go down, and they get the field goal. Now, you don't get the touchdown again, and you're sitting there just going, for the love of God, Sun Devils, get a touchdown. Then Texas goes right down and scores a touchdown again, and then finally – 10 plays, 75 yards, touchdown.
Scataboo touchdown from his freaking arm on a fourth down. That was unbelievable.
Was it fourth and 13?
Fourth and two? Fourth and 10?
No, fourth and 13 was yours.
Yeah, that was the other one, yeah.
I mean, just absolutely, it was fourth and two, you're right. Cam Scataboo to Malik McLean. Little trickeration. You know, they saved it for just the right time, and all of a sudden, because they get the field goal, because they get the safety, because they just claw and just get something, it's 24-16, and it's a one-score game.
And this is moments after Kenny Dillingham looked like somebody stole his lunch simply because he knew he wasn't working with a full deck at that point. Sam Levitt's taking hits. He hasn't taken all season. Scataboo hasn't had to deal with this physicality like a Texas defense ever. So he just knew, like, uh-oh, things aren't going right. But all of a sudden, nope, it clicked right back to Arizona State, man.
And then Quinn Ewers, what are you doing? What are you doing?
It's the ultimate Quinn Ewers game. And the reason why I say that is because you saw the bad, the interception. When you're up by eight, all you have to do is hold on
just
to the football.
Take care of the ball, brother. It's all you got to do.
Don't throw into double coverage there. You don't have the arm strength when it comes to long balls.
No.
Just eat that one or run it yourself. Bad call by Sark. But at the same time, the fourth and 13 in double overtime, the first overtime,
that throw.
It's unbelievable. He has to thread it into a needle. Now, don't get me wrong. Where's the Arizona State safety? Like, there's one guy in the seam. You're there to stop that throw. You need to be there. But at the same time, Quinn Ewers, Arizona State is bringing a blitz. He stands in there, knows he's going to have to take a hit, and delivers a strike. That's why you see so many people that are pro Quinn Ewers be like, this guy could be great in the NFL. He's going to be
His highs are high.
He's also the reason why people watch this Texas team and go, they have a really good defense, and I really like what they can do when they run the football, but I don't think that they're a national championship team because of who's playing QB.
And that's the thing is you get into this game and Ewers doesn't just allow the door to be open. He kicks it open for Arizona State. And then here comes Scataboo. 62 yards to the house. And, you started to see him build the momentum late in the third quarter. He breaks the 24 or 26 yarder. And you're like, oh, there it is. There he is. It's kind of what we saw with Genty and Boise State when they started to build a little momentum in their game, when Genty started to kind of wear on them, and you're like, okay, maybe Boise State can do it. And then it got snuffed out.
Yeah.
But it was the same kind of thing. It's like he just wore on him, and then he breaks tackle, and he breaks another tackle, and then he breaks free and takes it to the house. And then Dillingham says, you know what? Screw it. We're going to – our horse got us here. We're going to throw the saddle on him again. Run Scataboo for a two-yard gain for a two-point conversion. And you go, oh. And it was in a minute 30. And then you have targeting.
That was targeting. I don't want to see the end of a game decided by the referees, but if we are going to have the rule, that was absolutely targeting. If that's not targeting by
then
the letter
not,
of the law.
Then there's not targeting.
Yeah, I don't really understand what the referees are doing there. What conference were the referees from for this game?
ACC?
Yeah, it was ACC for the Rose Bowl, so I don't know if
it was. Were Big Ten.
Big Ten. It's not an SEC crew, but they clearly made the conscious decision of, like, we're not going to throw that flag here.
You have to,
but then that's the thing is,
he was defenseless, and he had the whole, what is it, the fencers look afterwards. Yeah. Like, he obviously got a concussion, and then the replay shows him getting nailed right in the face.
Look, I don't think it was a dirty and or malicious hit. I think it's just bang, it happens. The targeting rule is the number one thing that needs to be revisited in football.
It needs to be gone. And
you want to have it be a flag? Fine. The ejection can no longer be a part of it as far as automatic. Now, if somebody goes out there and Ryan Clark somebody, okay, cool. You can suspend him after the game, but we're not throwing guys out of games anymore.
Or maybe if it's violent enough, like, you can decide if it's an egregious and obviously egregious play that was, you know,
if it's Vontaze Burfict trying to kill somebody,
get him out of the game.
But yeah, like, okay, he can go. But
decision
saying, like,
by decision basis.
It can't be an automatic. Like, it needs to be objective. Like, nobody watches that and goes, you know, Taffy's, you know, being malicious. It just happened. It just happened. That's all it was. But, and again, this doesn't decide the game, but I was watching Van Pelt afterwards, and the thing that just, like, the question that was brought up was the integrity of the game. Because, like, that's our ultimately left, like if that falls. I was like, yes, you don't want a game to be decided on penalty, and all this, da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
But it's so egregious. This was Rams Saints pass interference. Like, it's so bad. It's like, they're the only people on the planet who don't think it was targeting are those brain dead burnt orange fans. I'm not talking about all Texas fans. I'm talking about the
idiots.
The absolute fringe of that fan base. I loved it. Was just like whack a mole on social media last night. Watching, I'm like, I don't know. That's not targeting. And like every media member going, are you dumb? Like every other fan of every other fan base is just sitting there going, are you stupid? Like, that's targeting. Like, crown of helmet hits crown of helmet, and he went out, dog. Like, it is what it is.
And nothing's going to happen to the referees. The NCAA, I don't know if they've come out today. And I'm not saying the referees should be, like, you know, lambasted or anything. Maybe a little bit of a fine or something like that, or not working a college football playoff game for a couple of years to learn from their mistake. But, man, this situation sucks.
It does. The other situation that sucks here is for Texas. One of the best kickers in the country. One of the best kickers in the country has
doink.
Two chances to win the game.
Double doink!
With 4 minutes or less. And
by the way, Texas has a kicker named Auburn.
Yeah.
That's like Oregon having a kicker named LSU. Yeah, it's just a weird world that we live in. My brain could not handle it.
No, it's... But for that kicker... Look, to admit, was the first one was a deep one. The first one was... Was it 50-something?
40. It was a 48, yeah.
That's, look, 48 is not a gimme in college football.
NFL kickers miss those all the time. Justin Tucker just missed one last week.
But a 38-yarder? Oh, bud. And then after Sark gives him the 3-minute pep talk, did you guys see the video? I think it was Josh Pate put it out.
I did. The moment that the kick was missed, yeah.
Look.
Make it more about yourself, Sark, by the way.
Yeah, yes. Yes, you're right. But I did find it funny. It was like a black cat walking past the kicker, like, or walking, you know, breaking a mirror or walking under a ladder. The two cheerleaders that walk across. The thing is Auburn is not, like, kind of getting ready to kick.
He's ready.
He's winding up to kick.
He's in the middle of his warm-up. He's not walking up to put the ball into the stand.
And you almost wonder if, like, he just got triggered. Like, he just, like, are you kidding me?
He did. You look at the reaction. He looked up like, "Gah!"
And I almost wonder if that set him off. And, you know, it was kind of one of those issues where it just got sideways.
I mean, isn't that, I did see some of the response to that saying, well, if that's true, then he's soft. I kind of agree with that take. I get it. He's still a younger kid. What is he, 21? But, like, come on. Like, you can't deal with somebody, like, throwing you off. Okay, they threw you off for a second. Let's get your mind back in and then try another practice kick or two, buddy. Forget about it. Move on. You wouldn't be a good closer in baseball, if that makes sense. Yeah.
I do love this. The tinfoil is tightening right now on the Vancouver 4 text line. Do you think the network's going to allow that targeting call to stand, thus knocking one of the biggest rating opportunities to go away from the CFP show? Texas equals millions in viewership dollars for the network. Arizona State does nothing for them.
ESPN allowed the bungling of the Rose Bowl to be starting at 2 p.m. on the dot on the channel that was already playing an overtime game, which left both teams' fans scrambling to try to find stuff.
I'm genuinely surprised that they had it, like, they didn't do like a 2:15 or 2:17 kickoff just to allow.
I think that was the Rose Bowl. That was the Rose Bowl, the granddaddy of them all, holding true and steady to their traditional 2 o'clock start time, and they would not waver. So
that's so weird to
me. They don't change for anyone. They're the whole reason why, like,
true.
The Rose Bowl is like, we won't move. We are on New Year's Day. This is how we do it.
Yeah.
Which, honestly,
I get
it. Kind of respect.
Yeah, no, I get it.
I kind of respect it, man.
If I'm ESPN in that situation, I am giving them the double burden, being like, fine, end your contract with us. Take me to court. We're pushing this damn game 15 minutes back so we can see the other college football playoff matchup.
Yeah, that was going into overtime.
Exactly.
Let's get into that overtime. Let's get into Arizona State. Let's get into Kenny Dillingham and everything else that came out of this game. Coming over next here on Danny and Dusty, Danny the Fan.
Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and 1080 The Fan.
This might be the best song for Arizona State this year. A team picked to win 4 games. Lost 3 on the season.
Nobody thought we could do it, Adrian. Nobody thought we could do it, and I did it.
This Arizona State team showed that even more than the idea of what they were, of just, you know, a fun, plucky team, they competed with one of the best teams in the country in Texas. They took them to the wire, and they ultimately end up losing in overtime because Quinn Ewers throws an absolute freaking dime in the second overtime, and Arizona State just couldn't get it done.
But the fact that they were able to hang in there with such a physical team through the fourth quarter and even down by 2 scores, able to get it so quickly back to an even game, that is just unfreaking believable. I still could not believe, like, you tune in, what? If you hadn't watched any of that game, you come in 8 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, you're like, okay, you know what? The air is gone for Arizona State. Texas is just sailing, but absolutely not. Nope, that was not the way that it went at all. And props to Kenny Dillingham and Sam Levin and Cam Scataboo. And I put it solely on those three and then a little bit on offensive coordinator Marcus Arroyo as well.
The for me, the 30,000-foot takeaway from this game is Arizona State belonged. That is what I came away from. This, like, immediately. That game's over. You know, it's a lot of, you know, again, I'm in a room full of Duck fans. Everybody's like nodding along, like, you know what? That's a bum Arizona State loss. They belong. Like, that was, like, nobody came out of that game going, ah, well, you know, seeding and all this. Like, no, it was
shouldn't have been there.
It was a great game. And I'm going to contrast this with the Ducks. And this is kind of what I mean as far as, like, the expectations versus for Arizona State versus Oregon. Arizona State with Kenny Dillingham, this was supposed to be a dog-ass team. They're supposed to be under sanctions and, you know, be shorthanded and be struggling to kind of build from within. And he gets a transfer running back from Sacramento State and Cam Scataboo, a 3-star, if you squint, undersized quarterback in Sam Levitt from West Lynn. It's not exactly the place that's pumping out, you know, high-level college quarterbacks. And they pair it with just a bunch of dudes that just fought for each other. And you've already seen the social media posts from the players. They're like, I'm coming back. I'm not hitting the transfer portal. I want to run this thing back. Scataboo is going to be probably the second running back taken in the draft.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to be Genty than him. Like, I don't think he's going to be a first-round draft pick, but somebody's going to look at him and go, hey, the guy that just ran for 1,500 yards and caught for 500 more, also he can pass block. Also, he's tough as nails, like runs between the tackles. He's got breakaway speed. Like, he does all of the things.
He'll throw the ball for us on a trick play.
That's
a second-round steal right there.
He's just a dude. He's just a dude, right? And, you know, I don't expect Arizona State to run this thing back, but they're going to be the favorites going into the Big 12 next year.
Yeah.
Like, that, I don't think that's going to be a surprise. You've gotten Deion Sanders come out and say, you know, hey, congratulations to Coach Dillingham. You really are the coach of the year. I thought that was big of Prime to do that. I genuinely did, because you don't often see, like, I wouldn't expect Dan Lanning to do that for Lincoln Riley, or for Lincoln Riley to do that for Dan Lanning.
I mean, Dan to do that for Ryan Day or something after it. Yeah.
No, I'm talking about interconference. Like, okay. I guess it's true. Yeah, they are
now. They are.
Yeah, I still had.
He didn't do it for Cignetti, and Cignetti won this year.
Yeah, it's exactly what I mean.
A great,
like,
point. Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't, like, so, like, for me, that was a pretty classy move by Prime, but also it was a recognition of what Arizona State has been, and that's kind of what I'm talking about when I talk about Oregon versus, you know, expectation. Arizona State, everything past 4 wins was a bonus for them. Like, that, like, that's the thing, is, like, them being remotely competitive was already a win. Then you throw on, they go and win the conference. They're playing with house money. But I don't think they saw it that way. I think they genuinely believe, and I think Dillingham genuinely believed that they were a better team than they were being afforded. But Arizona State alum, fans, supporters, even though they lost, they're all walking away with their heads held high. And I don't even think because they lost in overtime. It was because the level of competition that they were there with. If you're Oregon fan, you're looking at your game, let's say that even the game was closer. Let's say it's not a nail-biter, but it's Ohio State walks away with a convincing enough win. You're disappointed even then simply because the expectation was title. And I think like that's when you're talking about like where teams are in their pecking order. And the thing for me is, and Dusty and I have joked about this for 2 years, did Arizona State, is the sleeping giant awake? Like, is that, are they a team that we can see, like, are they going to be the king of the Big 12?
If anyone can do it, it's Dillingham. Just but looking at the staff that he's assembled, do you know that the furthest person, so on his staff, the furthest person was 50 miles away growing up from Arizona State. So every coach either played at Arizona State or they grew up in the area. Mm-hmm. So everyone knows what it's like to be from that Tempe area. Then he's gone out and he's found guys like Scadaboo, like Levitt, who were disrespected somewhere else. Now, the one thing that you'll notice, and some people took issue with it, and I didn't necessarily. It would depend on what I heard, right? I wasn't on the sideline, so I don't know. Remember when things were going wrong? Levitt and Scadaboo were yelling at each other, mm-hmm. at their teammates. Their teammates were yelling back and forth. Now, we don't know what was said, but it could have been a more fiery, hey, why aren't you doing this? Why didn't you miss your block here? We need to make this play. And initially what most people see when they see that kind of fieriness is, oh, they're yelling and screaming at their teammates. They hit their teammates' hands. That's a bad teammate. They're not talking them up. They're not trying to promote them. Well, sometimes football isn't built like that. And when you have those blue collar chip on their shoulder type guys, sometimes they play better when they yell and they scream at each other and they have a
true passion. We've seen that a million times. Yeah.
All the time. And it felt like this Arizona State team, they never gave up. They just got upset with themselves that what they were doing wasn't working. Mm-hmm. So you have this culture of people that understand what Arizona State is and what it can truly be. And now you've paired it with this blue collar mentality from players where I should have been at a higher spot. Kim Scadaboo thinks that he should have been an Alabama type of running back, but he was sent down to Sac State because no one talked to him. Sam Levitt didn't get recruited by either of the colleges in his backyard. They didn't offer him. He wanted those scholarships. And then to make matters worse, he goes to a school that gave him that scholarship offer, and then the coach that wouldn't offer him goes there and tells him to leave again. So you have a group of players that almost that old school Mike Riley feel where, mm-hmm. hey, you're going to want to come here. We'll develop you.
Chip on your shoulder.
We'll give you that opportunity to get your revenge mixed with, we love this place. We're not going to leave this place. We love Arizona State. We're going to stay here as a coaching staff forever. I think you might have seen the beginnings of the rumblings of Arizona State waking up.
Well, it's obvious, too, that Kenny Dillingham went to the school of Dan Lanning and why Dan Lanning hired him to be the Ducks offensive coordinator, because Arizona State, as Will just laid out beautifully, you know, not really the team that had a chance. Nobody was expecting them to do this at the beginning of the season. What did Tez Johnson say going into the game before Ohio State for the Rose Bowl in the quarterfinals of the college football playoff? Nobody gave us a chance. That is the Dan Lanning mentality, like, hands down, from the top to the bottom. So it's
you make it up as you go, and you manufacture that chip.
Exactly.
I do want to talk about Tez a little bit later, too, and what he did with Will Howard after the game. I thought that was pretty damn impressive.
That was cool.
But this Arizona State team, they prove they belong. I think that's the takeaway. And Will talking about the coaching staff there, Hines Ward being the wide receiver coach is just – and it always catches me off guard when I see him on the sideline. I'm like, oh, that's right, Hines Ward is the wide receiver coach at Arizona State. When that wide receiver picked up the 15-yard penalty for throwing the ball at the DB in his face, and Hines Ward, they cut to Hines Ward, great job by the producer. Fantastic job by the producer in the truck. Be like, cut to Hines Ward, cut to Hines Ward, cut to Hines Ward. Because you caught every word of the bleepity bleep, 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 bleep off the field now. And I was like, ah, that's a football coach right there.
Yeah, it's Mario Cristobal style. But I kind of like that. I'm down for the chewing out when they need it.
I mean,
not just randomly, when you screw up like that, yeah, you need to hear it.
The impressive thing for me in this game, when it was all said and done beyond Arizona State competing, was that time of possession. And I know Texas scored quick and all that, but for Arizona State to continue to manufacture yards, like at every point other than fourth down, if a fifth down existed, my God, Arizona State would be the best team in football because they just could not get it done on fourth down. I mean, I don't – 3 of 6 is insane. 3 of 6 is insane. Just to blow those first three and then to get the final three, just –
Well, I mean, the first one you got was with your punter throwing it to your big defensive lineman.
Your 6'4", 290-pound defensive tackle.
Hilarious.
Boy, let me tell you, it was fun watching him because he was terrified. He looked back like he didn't turn his shoulders to catch the ball. He was like backpedaling up the field like, oh, God, please hit me in the numbers. And then he did the big guy thing of didn't tuck that thing away, and I'm like, oh, no, he's going to loaf bread this thing. I thought for sure he was going to fumble. I was like, oh, no, oh, no, oh, no.
He got next to the sideline.
Exactly. And but that again, goes to my point about Arizona State. They just, number one, holy crap, talk about putting your balls in the chop. I mean, you're playing with house money at that point in time. If you don't get it done, you're done anyways. Yeah. Texas had no idea that was coming.
No.
I mean, they were halfway lined up. They're like, all right, let's keep this thing going kind of a deal. That's when the game changed. That's when the game changed was that, for me, is they got the momentum kind of off that. And like, hey, you know, we can be there. We can make something happen. But that time of possession, 38 minutes to 22 minutes.
Yeah, that's a crazy
2-1?
It's a great game plan by Dillingham. Yeah, basically what he said there is, you're going to wear down. And it didn't work in the first half. Running Cam Scataboo wasn't working. Throwing with Sam Levitt wasn't working because he couldn't use the play-action pass because they weren't biting on Scataboo getting a fake handoff. But it worked in the second half.
What was the line he kept using? They aren't taking the cheese?
Well, yeah. They weren't taking
the cheese. They weren't taking the cheese?
And then Sam Levitt used his legs. 60 yards rushing from a quarterback, and he looked great doing it.
He is slippery.
He's so good.
He is slip. Like,
so good.
How big is he? Is he like 6 foot
tall? 5'11".
They have him listed at 6'2", and I'm not buying that.
No, he's probably okay. So if he's listed at 6'2", he's probably 6'1", 6 foot, 6'1".
I'll say 6'1".
But he's listed at 200 pounds. I'm buying that. Yeah. I'm buying that. He's a solid kid.
He's legit. He works really hard. When I was going through, when I thought that I would get to play a little bit after college, in the gym that I was lifting at, he was there a lot as well. He was one of those guys too. Like as soon as high school classes ended for him, he was at that gym and he was doing some sort of prehab. He was doing some sort of post-hab. He was stretching. He was working out. He was going through the whole process. This kid, he's smart. His brother played in the NFL, not at quarterback, but he played in the NFL. He knows how to be successful in football and he will be. It's clear. Like, this is just the beginning of this kid.
I can't remember if it was on the broadcast or in the post-game show. They said going into next season, Sam Levitt is going to be on the top five of preseason Heisman lists.
He is. He's already on the Heisman watch list. Wow. He's
crazy.
Good. He's 19, maybe just turned 20. Like,
I mean, he's a redshirt freshman. I mean, he's still a baby.
He's only got room to grow. And here's the beauty, though. The head coach, it's Dillingham, the same guy who fixed Bo Nix.
Yeah.
Like, this guy, it's the same guy who coached Jordan Travis, who helped Jordan Travis become what he was, right? Yeah. Dillingham can coach quarterbacks. He's a little bit of a whisperer. I'm really excited. Maybe it's just recency bias. Maybe it's because the kid is a local kid. I really like what Levitt's got going on.
No, it's fun. And it's fun to talk about Arizona State. I was pulling for Boise State. I was pulling for Arizona State. I picked Texas to win the national title. I said that coming into this. I've said that all season. But I was still pulling for Arizona State because I love the underdog stories. They're so much fun. Not only that, I wanted an upset. Technically, Ohio State, Oregon's an upset. It's not an upset. Ohio State was favored. Seeding-wise, it wasn't an upset. I mean, seeding-wise, it was an upset. But on the betting market, it wasn't. Arizona State was a 13.5-point dog.
Yeah, I don't. That was like the easiest ticket to cash yesterday.
I mean,
damn.
That's bonkers to me. All right, coming up next, time for our worst day on the web. Let he who has not let prisoners out of jail for New Year's cast the first stone. First, here's Big Will Betts with the Sports Center update.
It's time for today's worst day on the web. With Danny and Dusty on Odyssey and 1080 The Fan.
That sucks.
Some people are old and washed and they stay home for New Year's. Some people, like Will, are only partially washed. You're grabbing your shampoo, although in your case, maybe not shampoo because you don't have hair.
That's right. I use Old Spice.
Are you a body wash head to toe kind of guy without the
although shampoo? I sometimes accidentally buy the shampoo, and if I do that, then I just stay with shampoo until I run out because I don't have enough money to double buy body wash and shampoo. So it's possible that right now we're rocking some shampoo showers.
I remember the old 3-in-1 Old Spice, the shampoo body wash stuff. I think it was like $8 at Fred Meyer.
I wish it was 3-in-1, buddy. I wish. It's just straight shampoo.
Yeah, I'd say, not only that, you know, shrinkflation, it's only 2-in-1 now. 3-in-1 has gone down to 2-in-1.
That's true.
But I say all of that because sometimes you don't, it's the levels that you get to for New Year's. Well, in Zambia, a drunken police officer freed 13 arrested suspects from their jail cells so that they could go celebrate New Year's.
So, like, they were supposed to come back? Like, there was an agreement? Or
no, he, like, took the keys off of a detective, like, out of a movie, like the big giant key ring for the prison cells, and went and unlocked the men's and women's cells and said, go hither. Go enjoy New Year's. Go enjoy your freedom.
Be better in 2025 than you were in 2024.
Of course, this guy's completely slammered. I would love to know what he was drinking.
Like, no kidding. When you Sambuca? Make, my God. Say, like,
there's levels of bad decision-making when you talk about alcohol. Like, how many people make, like, unconsciously horrible decisions? Like, oh, my God. No. Before you put your hand up.
I don't think that's what he's talking about.
When you drink rum. See, hand goes down. Because when you drink rum, you're having a good time. You're like, oh, you know, it's whatever. Like, but if you drink, like, well tequila?
Yeah.
Bad decisions are being made.
Clothes coming off at some point.
Look,
bad decision. There's a lot of running around.
Right?
Like, there's a walk home involved.
There's like different levels of bad choices that come along with alcohol. So unfortunately, we don't know what this officer drank, but the 13 people released, they were accused of crimes such as assault, robbery, and burglary. So, like, this wasn't, like, petty, like, little things. Like, it's like, probably shouldn't let these guys go. But I'll open this up to the Vancouver Ford text line, 503-864-6326. What is the alcohol that makes you make the worst choices?
That's a good question.
Four Loko.
Well, so the malt?
Yeah.
The malt liquor's got to be up there.
That's been outlawed, but yeah, at least the original.
Well, yeah, the original recipe's gone.
I was going to say, trust me, buddy, it's not outlawed. But that's also, here's the problem with that. The worst decisions that I've made on alcohol have always been when I was right around the age of 21, and that's the closest I'm going to come to claiming that. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And it's always the cheapest that can get you the most drunk. Right? It's the Four Loko, it's the Mad Dog, it's the Buzz Ball. Like, I'm not drinking any of that anymore. So is it because I don't drink that anymore why I don't make those bad decisions? Or is it because I am around the age of 21 and I'm making bad decisions anyways, and then the alcohol really doesn't help it?
Vigor Vortex line, the first reply already nailed it. That guy must have been drinking Cobra whiskey to make a decision that bad.
Ooh.
Yes. And that, like this, something had to have happened. Like, what's the mat shot called? Rust has told me before. You know what I'm talking about? The mat.
Oh, sits
on there,
where they ring it out.
They ring it out.
It's like, disgusting.
That's, that is a liquid bad choice. Like, you are not going to make good. Like, look, I know most people, a lot of people, I shouldn't say most people, a lot of people are probably going to say tequila.
I would
bad
say so,
tequila
yeah.
will ruin you. Good tequila, like this is Don Julio. If you want to sponsor the show, I will greatly, grandly, whatever word I was trying to put together there, will carry the banner for Don Julio.
Casamigos over here for Schulte. Yeah.
But good, well refined, low sugar tequila.
Yeah. Oh, you feel
amazing. You're just feeling good.
You can keep drinking it.
Yeah, that's the whole point. Like I keep my Don Julio in the freezer. I like a nice ice cold Blanco Don Julio, little bit of lime, not in the drink, just in a little afterwards. But I can sit there and sip on. Yeah. I can drink a half a bottle, and the next day be fine.
Anything below Jose Cuervo, you're starting to play a dangerous game.
No, Jose is the line. Jose is the line. Like, if you're drinking, what's the social media video of the woman? It's tequila, you know.
Hornitos?
Yeah. It's like Hornitos is up there. Cuervo's up there. Yeah. Anything with it's the sugar. Like, it just screws your brain up. Goldschlager leads to regret every time.
Southern Comfort for me. That was a bad one in college.
Did they stop making Goldschlager?
I haven't seen it in a while.
Maybe not in America.
Jim Beam was a problem for a little bit.
Jim Beam's disgusting.
It was not good. I can't drink it anymore, and I like bourbon.
I'm a bourbon guy, and I can't do Jim Beam nor Southern Comfort, which technically isn't a bourbon, but it's like a sweet lime whiskey or whatever the hell it was. Ugh. Had so
it
many
is still
bad
made.
Mornings on that.
Actually, it was re-released. The original high-proof version, Goldschlager 107, was just re-released.
Oh my
goodness. So they got bought by like two different companies, or I guess bought by one and then bought by another.
I only know that from Superbad, and I don't know that I knew anyone who actually drank that.
It was a thing because it has literal gold.
Oh my God, it looks so fancy.
Yeah, that's what I remember. In Superbad, the girl that Michael Cera is trying to hook up with, she's just like, I love Goldschlager, that's what I get.
Yeah,
so he had to get the Goldschlager.
All over him.
No one drank that in college. That wasn't a thing.
Well, you couldn't afford that.
Yeah.
It is.
We drank HRD vodka in college. A handle of that was about $7 where I'm from,
y'all
which
ever
is
try
here.
Everclear?
Oh, God, yeah. You can't even say you make jungle
Everclear's
juice.
Everclear's gross.
Well, we didn't make jungle juice.
Hey, make jungle juice, you throw some Everclear in, you throw some HRD in,
yeah,
it's
I mean,
done.
Again, Goldschlager's not expensive, but it's expensive for kids.
It's $20 a bottle or
35.
Oh, well, but again, back then it was probably 25.
Yeah. That's expensive for kids.
Like, I mean,
yes,
it's like $35 a bottle of booze. Like, again, when
that's
HRD, HRD exists at $6-7 even now.
As a handle, not a 20-ounce, but a hand, or not a normal, a
gallon.
I remember being
the half gallon or the gallon or whatever.
I remember being jacked up like, sweet, I got $30 Coors Light tonight. Yes.
The 18-pack. Hell, a 36er back
then.
It was
like, instead, like, if you found a 20, it's like,
make sure you put it in. Make sure you put it in the fridge, though, because I could not count
the
number
of parties. How are you supposed to shotgun, then?
Well, yeah, no kidding. I could not count the number of parties that I showed up at, and the rack of beer was just sitting on the counter. And I'm like, why would I want to drink warm beer?
We're well past the statute of limitations, and this is fine. I was 15 years old, and I was going to a Seven Dust concert. A buddy's brother of mine bought us a case of beer. My buddy, not thinking, kept it in the trunk of his car.
Oh, no.
It was 100 degrees. Okay, you're 15, 16, 17 years old. You can't just go get more booze.
No, you got to go sneak into whatever that was.
No. So we had what we had. So we had 100 degree, it was either Keystone or Busch because it was cheap.
Yum.
Oh, brother.
Been there before, dude.
100 degree. Like, it like burned going down.
Boiling beer.
Boiling hot.
That's called Pullman water there, bud.
Oh, man. Yeah. And we sat there and we just kept pounding these and pounding them. It was one of the worst drinking experiences I ever had in my entire life.
How do you not just puke trying to get down? Yeah.
We did a lot. And you know what we did? We just kept drinking because we were dumb kids. And I just, again, the whole idea of drinking hot alcohol, hot beer. Oh, God, what a terrible, terrible moment. But yeah, the...
There's a term I've come up with. It's called responsibly stupid. That's what I would like to try to like be like when I'm out drinking. Like, hey, we're all going to make dumb decisions, but do them to a limit to where they're not like too dumb. I guess like the dumbest thing that I could do is like pee on a building or something. Be responsibly stupid. Don't be stupidly stupid.
I had somebody do that on a national monument. We got thrown out of a country.
Yeah, see, that's not quite what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about a monument. I'm talking about a building.
In his defense, one, he was very drunk. Two, we did not know it was pitch black.
Isn't that the Charlie Day argument in Horrible Bosses?
Didn't know!
Well, look, we were blackout drunk on a train. We walked off the train. It was like the first thing within like 50 feet. He's like, I'm going to go pee. He walked around the corner, and I hear, oh, God, ow, ow. And then he ran around the corner with his pants around his ankles, getting the crap kicked out of him by two cops, like beating him with nightsticks. And it was like, what is happening? Oh, my God. And, yeah, he was peeing on a national monument.
Wow.
Whoops.
He didn't know.
Partying in another country.
You know,
fun but dangerous.
Classic rude Americans.
Yeah, they basically, they dragged us into the immigration office and threw us on the, or stamped his passport with, like, a do not return and threw us back on the train.
Well, if you were in Zambia, it would have been fine, apparently.
Yeah, the cops would have let us go, which is absolutely insane. You just take a look at this and go, what in the hell? All right, coming up, we're going to pivot to basketball here just for a little bit. The Portland Trailblazers take on the Los Angeles Lakers. We're going to do a little check-in. Where are they at right now? Are they winning too many games? Are they losing too many games? Are people playing? Are they not playing? Who's healthy? Who's not? We'll do all that, and then we'll get back to some college football here on Danny Dusty, Tenny the Fan.
This is Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and Portland's sports leader, 1080 The Fan.
Checking in after the football bowl season was supposed to be done, at least this round. Georgia-Notre Dame going on right now, and boy, does this game suck. The Portland Trailblazers are down in Los Angeles to take on the Lakers in a game that in the past would probably matter a lot more. It doesn't really right now because
Beat LA.
It does. I mean, number one, it's on the road. Number two, it's January 2nd, and I think people are still going, I know a lot of people took today and tomorrow off.
And especially if you're a local sports fan and a Duck fan, I think you're going,
Yeah, I mean, that hangover, both like physically and mentally, probably does play a factor in it in a season that's already people don't really care about. You know, that's, I don't want
to. What's a hangover?
It's
you, young and you.
Your constant state of existence when you start drinking after 30. Which how it goes?
No kidding. After one, you're like, what the hell happened? I had two light beers.
But the Portland Trail Blazers, for the most part, are healthy. I talked to Matisse Thybulle. Was it last game? Last game pregame? He's been around more because he's getting closer. So when Matisse rolled his ankle, he was like 2 days away from coming back.
Yeah.
Like he was basically 100% cleared. Just a stupid thing happened and this is where it is. And, you know, sprained ankles can be dumb. And for Matisse, everybody talks about Robert Williams and Jeremy Grant and Anthony Simons and DeAndre Ayton as potential trade targets. Like, Matisse is the one to me I think is might even end up being the most likely. You know, the Dallas Mavericks tried to get him last year in free agency. They got the restricted free agency that the Blazers were able to match. I think Matisse can get on the court in the next week or two. He might be a guy that I think teams, because of his contract situation and where he's at and the ask of him, I think he's one of the more likely guys to be moved. And
so more so than any of the other three that we'd like to see as Blazers fans, mostly anyway.
Yeah, I think so. For everybody who's clamoring for deals, and I think you're probably looking at a second, maybe 2 second round picks at
for
most.
Matisse.
For Matisse, yeah. Like I don't think you're getting a ton for him, but I think Matisse is the one. Like you have so many guards, and they can kind of afford to make that, and I think that they kind of want to. For him, like, because he's a veteran and looking for, and it's easy. It's like, if the Blazers are able to get a second round pick for him and not take back bad money, and they can kind of not wash their hands, but like get him to a spot where it makes more sense for him, they're open and willing to doing that because of the financial or lack of financial ramifications.
Well, yeah, he's a 3-and-D guy off the bench, not an elite 3-and-D guy, so that doesn't serve a team trying to rebuild very well. That's a playoff
contending piece. Not just that, he's a $12 million contract. Now,
that too.
When you're talking about trading Jeremy Grant or Anthony Simons or DeAndre Ayton, because of the size of their contracts, the money that you have to take back and the compensation you're going to want in return, like the Blazers aren't just going to trade Jeremy Grant for second round picks. I don't think that's going to be the case. I would be stunned if they traded him for second round picks.
Do you think his value is kind of more so like the Kristaps Porzingis value that the Celtics were able to get him for? Because I thought that was a pretty easy deal for them to make. It was like a player and either a low first or an early second. It didn't seem like they gave up
that
much.
Yeah, they gave up the first and Marcus Smart.
Thank you. That's what it was. Yeah. And it wasn't a very good first.
No.
So is that a similar deal to Jeremy Grant?
I think ultimately that's where things go.
Okay.
But just in this market, if they do a deal. And I don't think it's a guarantee that they do a deal. I think Jeremy Grant definitely thinks that, you know, a deal is more likely to happen. I think that's part of the agreement of when they signed the deal. But that's also the part of this, is that he did sign a 5-year extension and the Blazers did pay him. It's like, and if they're not going to get a deal where the requisite compensation makes sense to them, I just don't think they're going to do it. That's what Joe Cronin in this front office has said. They're not just going to do a deal to make a deal. And they've said over and over that they'll be patient, all those things. But Robert Williams is back. Delano Banton, if he doesn't play tonight, this is a 5-game trip. I expect that Banton will be back. If not this game, probably next game. I talked to him pregame, and he was like, yeah, honestly, it was just stiff. He was talking about his hip. And, you know, it came, oh God, 4 games ago, he fell and just landed hard on his hip. And he said, yeah, I didn't really notice it. I tried to come back in, just didn't feel right. Tried to play the next game, just didn't feel right. And just, you know, just kind of taking it easy. And then two has been dealing with that foot problem, that midfoot problem that they really can't treat. Like it just needs, it's one of those things where he just needs rest. And he's not going to get that into the All-Star break because two is a maniac and he covers more ground than anybody, you know, defensive utility, all those kind of things. But they're going to take on the 18-14 Los Angeles Lakers, who just made a trade for Dorian Finney-Smith, which they didn't use up their draft capital as in their first round picks, but they did use the salary slot in D'Angelo Russell that I think would be a part of a Jeremy Grant deal. It becomes very, very, very difficult to make a deal for Jeremy without it being like a 3-for-1 deal. And the Blazers roster is already at 15. Now, the thing to watch is this is January 2nd. Delano Banton's contract goes fully guaranteed January 10th.
What is it, like just a couple mil? Or?
I believe that it's a remaining $1.1 million, but that's $1.1 million that's guaranteed to be on the books.
Mm-hmm.
And they are currently $3 million, if I remember right. I got to say, like, this is what I'm doing over the next couple days is getting my trade season, you know, piece all together of where everything stands and where things are going to go, potentially, that is.
Yeah.
But the Lakers are a team that have been rumored around Jeremy Grant, and I just don't get the feeling that they're willing to part with any of their first-round picks. So that's obviously going to be a line that comes about as part of this game. The other part of that this is this Lakers team, man, they just feel fake.
Mm-hmm.
They feel like a fake contender, them and the Warriors.
Anthony Davis' status is downgraded, I guess, a couple hours ago, so not even sure if he's going to play tonight. So.
Well, part of that is probably sitting there thinking
it's Portland.
And, you know, there's an opportunity there for them to get a win. I think the Blazers tried when a couple games ago when they saw that, you know, there's going to be some guys out to sneak Danny some rest and give Jeremy an extra night and those kind of things. And Jeremy Grant is probably believe for tonight after getting the face contusion, got smacked in the head the other night or elbow in the head.
Bet the under on his rebounds because he won't be going for those tonight after getting smacked in the face.
I mean, he's surpassed Nurk as being the guy that gets hit in the face the most.
For no reason whatsoever. Yeah. Nurk, you kind of got it, but Jeremy Grant, like, why?
Vancouver 4 text line. Why does Billups hate Scoot? Answer that. I don't know what you mean by that. If you're saying because Scoot played better when Chauncey wasn't there, look, if you want to draw those lines, I'm not going to stop you. But you guys all know where I stand on the coaching stuff. Like, they're running the same scheme. They're running the same stuff. The only well, he made the change and he played Denny over Jeremy. He played Scoot over Ant. I'm like, yeah, Ant had one of his worst games as a pro, and so did Jeremy. Like, it wasn't hard to see that when Chauncey came back, or when the next game with Nate, he closed with Anthony Simons. He did it because he closed with a guy who was playing the best. It wasn't some weird thing, and you know, oh my God, all these politics, and Nate's really going to empower. Like, I think Nate's perfectly fine as a coach. I think Chauncey's perfectly fine as a coach. I don't think either's perfect.
I don't think Chauncey's a very good coach, but I digress.
That's fine. And I don't think he's the best coach in the league, but I don't think this whole idea of, like, that's going to be this thing that leads to, you know, firing Chauncey means Nate's going to take over and play the young guys. Nate played Jeremy Grant 41 minutes. He played Anthony Simons 39 and a half minutes.
He played the starters nearly as much as Chauncey.
More.
Yeah, actually more. You're right.
That's the thing, is more. And so, like, this whole idea of, like, it's like, chill. Like, when Scoot Henderson has played well, Chauncey Billups has played him. Like, if I'm going to give Chauncey credit for anything in his tenure, it is that every single guy that has played well has gotten the opportunity.
Okay.
Shaedon Sharpe, Scoot Henderson. Donovan Clingan had a 17-12-8 night. Why? Because he played well, and Chauncey left him out there, even though, organizationally, they don't want him playing more than 20 minutes because they don't want him out there playing and not being able to be productive. If you go back and watch that game, he doesn't play offense for 7 minutes.
Yeah.
He saves it all for the, like, he's just...
Just kind of hangs there.
He just hangs there, and he's the fifth guy down and kind of trails and works in some DHOs. He's not diving. Again, I'm not knocking him. That's just where he's at in his career. But the thing that Chauncey has done well is he's related to the players, and whenever they play well, he gives them those opportunities.
Do you think that the questions here from the Vancouver Ford text line about Chauncey and Scoot are based on where Scoot was drafted and the replacement that he was supposed to come in basically and be there for? Like, you know, 3 overall pick as a point guard. Well, okay, that's the future after Dame. And I would think it's super important, like more important than to get Shaedon Sharpe in there to develop in. And I don't know if that means immediately throwing him to the dogs, but second year in the league, I think you got to try to let him play through some stuff and leave him out there for longer than a couple of, you know, couple of minute stretches. Although I will say, in Chauncey's defense, it is hard to just leave Scoot out there at times because he is still super out of control. He's still very, very bad at turning over the ball. So if I'm Chauncey in that situation and I'm like, well, I want to leave this guy out here to develop, but after you see 3 straight turnovers as a coach, then you're going to start getting crap if you don't make an adjustment. So I don't like this situation here, you know, that Chauncey's in with Scoot, but I also kind of get why Chauncey's having to pull Scoot after he makes a couple of bad decisions on the court.
Here's the thing. I want Scoot to do well. Like, if for all of, like, you know, this, that, or the other, it's better for me personally if the Blazers are good. And I don't want to watch them be bad. I don't want guys to struggle. I don't want guys to stifle in their development. Like, that's, but Scoot Henderson, from year 1 to year 2, his usage rate is essentially the same. It's down a little bit. His points per shot attempt are almost exactly the same. He's 96.4 to 96.6. That is going from the 9th to the 13th percentile. His turnover rate has gone from 17.5% to 17.4%. What do you want me to do? His effective field goal percentage has gone from 43.4%, which is the 7th percentile, to 44.7%, which is the 13th percentile.
So we haven't seen growth. We've actually seen a little bit of regression.
It's essentially the same.
Yeah.
Like, it's essentially the same. Like, the one place right now where there's, like, real improvement. I'll show this to Chauncey so you can see it. There's one spot, and he's shooting better on long midi pull-ups.
Yeah.
Like, he's gone from 38% to 47%.
And that's even night to night a different story, frankly.
And
so
the thing is, the percentage has gone up, but he's cut his shot attempts from mid from the long mid in half.
Which he should.
But that's kind of my point. Is like, you take a look at what he has been, and he's improving his trips to the rim, but it's the same percentage. His three-point percentage is almost exactly the same. His turnover rate is almost exactly the same. His assist rate is almost exactly the same. So it's like, where's the development? Like, if I'm going to kill Chauncey, it's going to be because Scoot is out there hooping and he's not playing him. Like, that, when fans get mad about things, like, those are the ones that I understand. Like, if Shaedon goes out there and he's going crazy, then I get, like, him not playing. So
maybe this is where you kill Joe Cronin a little bit more than Chauncey. I don't know. Joe Cronin's the one that made the decision to draft Scoot Henderson. Chauncey literally just has to play him.
Oh, yeah. No, I think
that's the only point.
I think that's a higher level thing as far as, like, where you go with that, because I've already seen people kind of relitigating the draft, and it's like, yeah, we'll see where we are in 4 years.
I mean, I agree. I still think Scoot is basically Antonio Daniels 2.0, but prove me wrong, damn it.
All right, coming up next, let's dive back into some more college football. We'll talk a little bit about Georgia-Notre Dame as it's going on right now, but the circumstances that led to the game being pushed, as well as we'll revisit Oregon and Ohio State as well here in hour number 3 on Danny Dusty, Danny the Fan.